The RNC has approved the 2024 platform ahead of next week's convention in Milwaukee. We look it over and we look at the minority position when it comes to the issue of life. And there's growing angst on Capitol Hill as Joe Biden fights off those who wish to see him removed from the ticket today on the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Welcome into the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show. It's this one. Are you ready, Mitch? Here we go. It is Thursday, July 11th in the year of our Lord, 2024.
Dang.
Thank you. Justin Hall, Mitch Prosser, Dr. Steve Pettit, all together as one today on the program. They are to my left, only in position, probably more to my right than anybody else. Glad you're with us on the show today. If you haven't yet, make sure you give us a five-star rating and review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get them. Share this with your friends and family on Facebook and YouTube. Just subscribe and click the little bell. That way you know every time a new show comes out. It's very simple. All right, a lot to get to. We talked with you last week about the GOP platform that was being proposed. If you missed our conversation with Chad Connolly of Faith Wins, go back, listen to it. A lot of people have, so you're missing out if you haven't. And basically, what we have now in front of us is the 2024 Republican Party platform.
Let me guess. 45 pages.
No.
30 pages.
No.
16 pages.
16 pages. In honor of 2016, I guess. I don't know the significance.
I've been told that in previous years, the platform was over 60 around 60 pages long. Is that it? I'm looking at sources to me.
Sources close to the program can confirm.
Yeah.
Listen, the guys.
It's definitely easier to read.
Well, there are a lot of caps lock moments. Listen, a lot of these I think most Americans can jive with, so to speak, for lack of better vernacular. Number one, seal the border. Number two, carry out the largest deportation operation in American history. I don't really know if that's a policy position, but so be it. End inflation and make America affordable again. I'm going to stop. Make America the dominant energy producer. I like – number eight interests me. Prevent World War III. I think that should be on everyone's platform, yeah, shouldn't it? Restore peace in Europe. Good. And in the Middle East, that is very interventionist, by the way. And build a great Iron Dome missile defense shield over our entire country. All made in America. These are the points. Listen, this is a prime example, and I think platforms do this often. The platform meets the candidate, and the candidate is Donald J. Trump. And so the platform reflects his candidacy. These are his issues. These are his points. But there's a glaring thing missing in the top 20, and that's the issue of life. Where, as the old commercial is, where's the beef? For me, it's where's the issue of life here, Dr. Pettit? Where does this rank? Where should life rank for voters? But why is it not in this 20 that is front-facing out for the public to see?
Well, I think in my initial reading through it, obviously it's very strong military, very strong nationalism, very strong towards economic issues and protection and so forth, which those things are important. The purpose of government is to protect us from evil, and mm-hmm, so therefore right. It is the right thing.
Right.
However, I think when we look at it and it's glaringly missing anything about life, first of all, this is the first time in over 40 years that that has not been a part of the Republican platform.
Right.
So for me, as a Christian first, I'm extremely disappointed that that has been removed from priority.
Right.
It's not that there's not any interest in it at all, but it's been removed from priority. And for us as Christians, moral and spiritual values will be at the top of the list in priority.
You know, Mitch, there are some who would say that they can't understand why people would only vote on the issue of abortion. Point number four in chapter 9, 16 pages, 9 chapters. Point four, the life issue is here, but I'm going to read it.
And I think the language here is extremely important.
Republicans will protect and defend a vote of the people from within the states on the issue of life. Now, let me read it, and then I'll have thoughts. We proudly stand for families and life. We believe that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States guarantees that no person can be denied life or liberty without due process, and that the states are therefore free to pass laws protecting these rights. After 51 years, because of us, that power has been given to the states and to a vote of the people. We will oppose late-term abortion while supporting mothers and policies that advance prenatal care, access to birth control, and IVF. Number one, did no one read Justice Alito's opinion in Dobbs? Did no one read the opinion?
Yeah, well, it's been interpreted by a multitude of different people in a multitude of different ways. You know, some have said it's a states' rights issue or a state issue only, and those are people who are probably a little more myopic. There are those that have said, well, you know, maybe they were signaling something. And then there are those that have read it plainly who said, ultimately, it can be a state and federal issue. I love what politics1.com said. That they put this out on Monday as everything was coming out. They said the draft, the 2024 draft of the Republican Party platform, at this time when they put it out, it was only a draft, written by the Trump campaign, deletes the party's longtime, a couple of the party's longtime planks. One, protecting the right of a fetus via constitutional amendment. In other words, in previous iterations of the RNC platform, a constitutional amendment was explicitly mentioned in the platform,
right,
to protect a child in their mommy's tummy. Supporting a national ban on abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've said it's a 14th Amendment issue, which ironically falls under the scope of what? The federal government.
Mm-hmm. But?
But it's a state's issue. Yeah. And then one other person, and I'm going to hold the third one because there's a left hook to all this, mm-hmm, that is not mentioned at all.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you out there who are anti-IVF, I believe this is the first time that IVF has ever been inserted in the platform, which, right, has some people very concerned.
And yeah,
there's a little bit of nuance there.
Yeah.
So there are some concerns when it comes to that statement that you just read in regard to the party's platform. The tenet by which the RNC,
mm-hmm,
makes its decisions,
mm-hmm,
that's concerning.
Well, there are, and this is aside from, and this is within the biblical basis. I want to make sure I'm phrasing this right immediately. This is from a biblical point of view. But the central political organizer of society is marriage. That it is a political unit. A man and a woman, this is the reason why we incentivize marriage and thus the procreation of children within that marriage is because it is good for society. When men and women join together in marriage for life and then have children, we can continue civilization. The Republican Party, and again, we're a nonpartisan organization, so we can say this. The Republican Party is moving to the left on these issues, on life and on marriage. There is no mention of support of a biblical, traditional understanding of marriage in this document. There is none. The Republican Party, right now, and you guys can agree or disagree, they're sacrificing the biblical understanding of marriage in order to make the tent bigger. In order to just make the tent bigger. And I have a newsflash for you. They tried that in Great Britain. It didn't work. Didn't work at all.
Dr. Pettit, what does it look like when a society turns its back on traditional... Stop. Let me rephrase that. What happens when a society turns its back on biblical marriage? Is it good for society?
Well,
right?
Yeah, that's softball. Yeah, that's an easy softball. You know, I think these are very serious issues, and I think Christians should be deeply concerned about these decisions. I think the idea of getting in the right person in office, which is going to motivate people to say, okay, well, we can make some adjustments here, should deeply concern us. We are, the purpose of government is to protect and defend life, period. I understand it going back to the states as we've set our government up, but I also believe that it is the responsibility at the very top, whoever sits at the desk of leadership, cannot shift the responsibility to a state and take it off their desk. We are to pray for kings and all that are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life. So I believe it should be the responsibility of the federal government to protect life, just like we have a standing army that protects life. Mm-hmm. So this is something that should be very concerning. American believers need to be very strong in these areas, and it's going to push it back to the states, which I think that's another conversation, but I think it's going to create a greater division because, in our case in South Carolina, I think we're going to want to become stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're not going to become weaker.
No.
And I think our politicians are going to become very stronger, and then you're going to have a bigger division.
Right. Well, I think, and there's a minority position that was put out from the committee or the platform process, and I sense a growing fracture, but I want to posit this statement to both of you and to you at home. We now see the platform. For those of us who have been following Trump's candidacy in 2015 and his presidency from 2017 to 2020, because in spite of what many people tell you, he has been president before, so we kind of know what he'll do, and then his campaigning since then. These are serious omissions, or at the very best, just bringing their importance down a bit. However, as upsetting as this is to Christian conservatives, when we get to November and you go to the voting booth and it is candidate A versus, we assume, candidate B, we don't know yet, are Christians going to go, I'm looking at my ballot, this is the computer screen, you know what, I'm going to skip that one, and I'm just going to vote down ballot? Is that a legitimate possibility, or do the majority of evangelicals, looking at all the evidence, say, you know what, one still represents me better than the other, one platform still represents me better than the other, and I'll just take my medicine on this and actively participate in the process for the next 4 years to change the minds of the people that I want to put in charge? Or do they stay home? Because if they stay home, this candidate who is on this platform does not win.
I think it could be all of the above, which it just depends on the mindset of the individual.
Right.
The stronger the Christian conviction, the more struggle they're going to have within their conscience. That's going to be an issue. So is that going to, it's like being in a bathtub and it's full of water and you pull the plug and it's going to go down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Some are going to be a little more pragmatic, see down the road, say, okay, we can get through the next 4 years and then mm-hmm. get a different person in their position.
Yeah.
What it's going to do within the states, I don't know. Is it going to make the states stronger? So that actually your states that are now pro-life are going to be even more pro-life, then what is that going to do in the party overall? It's hard to say.
Well, Mitch, there's fear on one side of the aisle that the current president of the United States could drag down ballot votes. What? And then on the other side, there's also fear that the nominee could drag down ballot votes.
Conventional wisdom says yes to both.
Yeah.
Political conventional wisdom. And I think, Doc, you're right. I think you can throw that out. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, because I used to talk with people about, this is how political theory works. Good luck. It's all over the map. I think what you've got to focus in on here is that there is the fear that this could cost, there's been this thought for some time, a prevailing thought at that conservatives are going to take back the Senate. They're going to gain seats in the House. And now they're hedging. They're saying, well, we could lose seats in the House and maybe, the House becomes more liberal. And then, well, now we may not win as many Senate seats. And there's this question of down ballot races. And so it's all a turnout thing at this point. And that's one of the things that a lot of you are probably feeling right now and probably have felt for some time. This is just symbolic of where you've been. Do not disengage. You cannot... The country, your state, you and your family cannot afford for you to become disengaged or disenfranchised or to back away and say, I'm not going to vote. You still have to be a good Christian citizen and do your duty, your civic duty. Engage in the process. Pray for leaders. serve, get involved. And that's where I think we've got to go with this, is pushing, making sure people are still engaging and getting involved with this.
Dr. Pettit, you weren't on staff yet in your position when the debates were happening within the primary process. I will never forget, I don't know if we had the table then or if we were going stools only or chairs only, I don't remember, but it was about this spot. And we played a clip of the different candidates and their question, their answers to the question of what will you do as president regarding abortion. And I begged these candidates to say the following: I will be a pro-life president. I will work hard every day to ensure that we have pro-life representatives and senators filling the halls of Congress, and I will sign every piece of pro-life legislation that comes across my desk, ultimately with the goal of protecting every single life from the moment of conception federally. Period. I think that's I'm sorry, but at some point you got to sacrifice a few votes if you want to win morally. And none of them said that. And certainly they're not saying it right now with this platform. The minority position says this: in no season, this is a quote, under no rationale spurred by the exigencies of a political moment, can or should we abandon the high principles that have created and sustained this party into a third century, that being the fight for life. And they commit to the work of good for the good of every child, parent, and family, to the core policy positions endorsed through deliberation and transparency in previous platforms with respect to the funding of abortion domestically and internationally, the expansion of alternatives, support for credits for adoption in all children, ending the exploitation of embryonic human beings. So that appears to be a flip there on IVF. And above all, recognizing the application of the 14th Amendment protections to the developing offspring. So you have a fracture within the party. As Christians, we are to seek unity. And there are plenty of scriptures that talk about what unity brings. But how far should Christians go to keep unity on the platform or break on this issue and say, no, well, we're standing here?
Yeah, I would say unity in a biblical context is primarily among believers.
Right,
correct.
Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. I do think as a nation, we should seek to unify, particularly around varying causes. I mean, I think we should support our military, which is a unity-based issue. In this case, I think if you are a believer, you know what the Bible says. You cannot compromise on that. Righteousness exalts a nation. Now it comes down to who do I vote for? And I can't vote for someone who is pro-abortion, period. Mm-hmm. I think the Republican Party platform is a weaker position than it has been. But it does have in there at least putting it back on the states, the 14th Amendment, which I think is weak, but it's there.
I don't know that I've ever done this. I'm going to quote Adrian Rogers on our podcast. Adrian once said, "It is better to be divided in truth than united in error."
Yes. And that's a great point as well, because I still, even with all of this, and I'm just as concerned about issues with the platform and life and everything, still, and while I disagree on the issue of pushing it back to the states, because again, right in that cabinet, right up there, or down there, one of the two, it's somewhere, I have the Dobbs decision. I've read it. Justice Alito talks about, in his opinion, that representatives to Congress can also make laws regarding this issue because they're representatives of the people. So it just doesn't make any sense to me that states can do this, but the federal government cannot, when the federal government has been given the authority to defend life.
It's yes and, not either or.
Oh, it's
and
both.
I think, right, it's yes and. Should the state be doing it? Yes. And the federal government should be doing it. It's not either or.
One party wants to do it.
And right now, it appears that it's states, and is there political opportunity at the federal level? Currently, no. That does not mean that we should cease trying.
Well, it appears that there's a move to cease trying, and then if one side ceases to try, the other side's not going to stop. One final thing, because we've got a little bit of time left. It seems like this is a an underlying issue here as we move through the month of July. And if you've disengaged, re-engage. Because since we talked about the debate, post-debate, and since then, it has gotten messy. Leaks are springing like you wouldn't believe. I have thoughts on those leaks that shall remain thoughts in my own head for now, or maybe they'll get said off camera.
Do they ever really remain thoughts?
No. They always get said, whether on camera or off. There's an Axios report that the president's only really engaged from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. There are reports that his son is now in high-level meetings. There was a neurologist or a Parkinson's doctor visiting the White House months ago that no one was ever told about. But now we're seeing, within these leaks, gentlemen, we're seeing the media at large start to shift. And it's gone from, I'll give you an example. If you watch Morning Joe, good on you. Joe Scarborough on Morning Joe months ago said that the president right now, and I'm giving, these are just his words, the president is the best he's ever been. The day after the debate, he said it's time to move on to a different nominee. Earlier this week, he said Joe Biden's our guy. That's three separate answers within about a two-month time span. We are spinning right now. Meanwhile, the candidate on the other side is doing what the candidate on this issue did years ago, and that's just stay away. Just don't do anything. Just hang out. Don't interrupt your enemy having a good time is basically what he's doing. It's everywhere. And there are two sides of this camp. If you talk to people on the street or if you're engaged on X, formerly known as Twitter, you see people almost celebrating what's going on with the president and the current administration. For me, watching the debate and the moment since, I get a little cringy because I almost sort of wince and kind of pull back when I see the current president talking, because I feel sad. I feel sad. And I feel sad for him because he's the president of the United States. He's realized a dream of what has he been in office for 50-something years now. He's ran three times. But we're seeing a growing confusion and derision and angst. And we see some Christians celebrating that happening. But the Bible's very clear on what we're to do.
I was going to say, I don't think that should be our posture, should it?
No, I think what you brought up to the table are very important things. Number one, I think as a human being, and then even more, and then as a believer, there should be compassion for anyone. Number one. Number two, this is our country. Mm-hmm. This is my president. And I don't view him as an enemy. I would have to say I have great problems with the positions, and I would never vote in that way. Mm-hmm. We have a system in the United States. The greatest right that an American citizen has is that they can vote. Mm-hmm. And if we do not take that right, then we have no right to complain. Agreed. If you don't want to vote and be a part of the process, you have that right.
Agreed.
But you have the greatest right. And I think we need to encourage our people to get out and vote and then pray for our leaders. God is able to move the heart of the king like rivers of water. So we can pray, and we need to pray for our country now and then move forward.
I don't know, guys. I think we ought to listen to George Clooney on this.
Really? George Clooney, of all people?
Yeah, George Clooney says, you know, Joe's got to go.
Well, I think through all this confusion, I think Dr. Pettit makes a good point. And he also raised $14 million for the guy. Because we want to project strength. I think that's always important. And even if you disagree with the current president of the United States, I've gotten into heated conversations with people. I've said, you know, if the president were to walk through that door right now, I don't care who he is. I have honor for the office of which he holds. I will respect him or her, depending. They will get my respect. With any public office, I think that's the case. While we might vehemently disagree on almost every issue, the situation right now is we need to be careful not to fall into political opportunism for the sake of, listen, we all want to accomplish good things. I think we all want truth to prevail. We all want morality to prevail. I think we're missing that. But we can't sacrifice those good goals and good aims simply for political opportunism and who we want our candidate to run against or whomever.
Well, especially as believers. I mean, one of the things that I think so many believers forget is no matter who the person is, they're still an image bearer. They're still made in the image of God. And as fellow and a fellow image bearer, I think we have the opportunity and the obligation to be kind and gracious and merciful toward that person, mm-hmm. whether they're a believer or not. Now, I mean, there are certain levels of that. I think the big thing that, especially as we go down this funnel of politicism, the further down that funnel we go, the more divisive it becomes. And I think as Christians, yes, I wholeheartedly agree with what both of you are saying. I think we've got to focus in on what it looks like to win people and ultimately the gospel, because that's what this is all about. For us as believers, is being winsome in a way that wins people to the gospel of Christ, because otherwise we are of all men most hopeless.
I've found that more and more people are putting their hope in things that don't bring hope. We're involved every day in the policy sphere, but the policies that we pass, and they're good laws, and we champion those, and we are excited about those, but those are only brief. Those don't last forever. I mean, the very paper they're written on doesn't last forever. And I fear that more and more people are putting their hope in either political party or political persuasion than they are real foundational truth, simply because they're looking for something to cling on to.
Well, God raises people up and mm-hmm. God takes people down. God is in control of all nations. That's he right. tells us that. So for Christians, we rest in peace, and we rest in the security of our sovereign God, and then we do our part, and we get to watch God work. So for us as Christians, we should be encouraged mm-hmm. because we have a Lord who sits on the throne and will accomplish his will.
Yeah, don't live as if you're just living through the first 10 or 11 chapters of Ecclesiastes. Don't do that.
Speaking of encouraging, some good news coming out of the state of South Carolina on the medical front. We'll let you know a little bit more about that as we work through the details of a report coming out of MUSC. So update details on that coming very soon.
A lot coming from the Palmetto Family Matters Show and Palmetto Family Council in general. A couple of the people on this set will be in Washington in a couple of weeks. Doing some stuff with the Family Policy Alliance, and so they will be coming to you live. You notice I said they, so you know who's not going to be there. They'll be coming to you from Washington. That's okay. I'm going to be on the beach. They're going to be coming to you from Washington, letting you know what's going on there and things you need to know about coming out of that conference. It's going to be an exciting time. Always good when the family policy groups get together. I'm sure the Southern Poverty Law Center is going crazy right now. If you want to learn more about Palmetto Family, you can do it. PalmettoFamily.org is where you can go to get all the information on these issues, learn more about the organization. If you want to have Dr. Steve Pettit come speak at your civic group or your church or wherever in the fall, spring, winter, there are only four seasons. I'm missing one summer. You can do that. You can request to have him come. Email us, email@palmettofamily.org, and we'll be happy to set that up with you. Again, subscribe, do all the things, five-star ratings, reviews, all of that. If you want to invest in the work that we're doing, you can do that at palmettofamily.org as well. And I hope you saw the Easter egg on the set today. That's all the time we have for you here on the show. Thank you so much for watching, listening to the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. That's this one. For Dr. Steve Pettit, for Mitch Prosser, I'm Justin Hall. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your week and your weekend, and we will be with you again next week.